ववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Nice to see you all. We continue our study of Uddhava Gita. Welcome also to our many students watching these classes, taking these classes online. We've just recently begun our study of Uddhava Gita, and the opening portion in chapter 2 was quite dramatic as Sri Krishna tells Uddhava, remember I gave the joke before, if Sri Krishna spoke American English, how about if you spoke with a Brooklyn accent? And by the way, I'm terrible at accents, but the setting is Dwaraka is about to self-destruct. Sri Krishna would say, "Get out of here." How's that? Not too bad. Anyway, you get the point. Get out of here in two different ways. Obviously, get out of Dwaraka. Sri Krishna himself has finished his work as an avatara, and he's getting ready to leave this worldly realm and return to Vaikuntha Loka. But for Uddhava, remember, Uddhava said, "Take me with you." But in order to go Vaikuntha Loka, you have to die. And Sri Krishna didn't want his dear friend and cousin to die, so he didn't suggest that at all. Instead, he said, get out of Dwaraka and live a spiritual life. And that live a spiritual life, we can interpret it in this way. Not only should Uddhava get out of Dwaraka, he should get out of samsara. Okay? Get out of Dwaraka, obviously. Get out of samsara. But now here's the problem. How to get out of samsara? Samsara means worldly life. More specifically, the suffering of worldly life. And if you think death is one way to get out of samsara, it doesn't work because according to the doctrine of karma, you get reborn again. So it's only a temporary solution. So then how to get out of samsara? And the answer is a life of sadhana, a life of practice, which is what we're going to see going on. Now, before we proceed today, Uddhava, after what we've seen so far, Uddhava asks Sri Krishna, okay, but how can I live without my family? Remember, his family is in Dwaraka. All those Vrishnis are going to fight with each other and destroy themselves. Uddhava is going to leave all of that behind. So he asks in a very tender way, how can I go on? How can I live without my family? And Sri Krishna begins a little bit of advice, but then immediately switches to a story of someone who was very well adapted to living without a family. And that one was, he was a Brahmana, and he was an Avadhuta. Avadhuta is the name for an ascetic who has renounced all worldly pleasures and often wanders in the world without having any goal to accomplish. Avadhuta literally means one who has shaken off. So one who has shaken off samsara in this context. The Avadhuta was enlightened. And since the Avadhuta was so accustomed to wandering without the support of family, Sri Krishna chose to teach Uddhava a very lengthy teaching based on a dialogue between that Avadhuta and the very ancient King Yadu. So this dialogue between Yadu and the Avaduta consumes the rest of chapter 2. So the remainder of chapter 2 is all this dialogue between the Avaduta and King Yadu. And then chapter 3 is more of the dialogue. And chapter 4 is more of the dialogue. Now, that's the style of our scriptures. Everything very, very lengthy, like we saw in the Mahabharata. Now, we want to stay focused on Sri Krishna's teachings. And as I said, when we started this text, we would take selected chapters. So for this reason, we are going to skip the remainder of chapter 2, which is that dialogue. We will skip chapters 3 and 4, which are also concerning that dialogue. And we'll pick up the thread, so to speak, in chapter 5. And that's what we'll do today. So in chapter 5, we're back to Sri Krishna's teachings. And the chapters in the Uddhava Gita are not named like those in the Bhagavad Gita. Generally, chapters are just known by their chapter numbers. Bhagavad Gita chapters are named because it's such an important and widely studied text. But be sure you understand, those titles were added by later scholars. So they're not an essential part of the text. Here, there's no chapter titles, so we simply begin chapter 5. The topic, of course, as I just said, is sadhana, how to get out of the samsara, and also, I've said before, these are teachings meant for the Kali Yuga. Let me make one observation about that before we begin chapter 5. And the observation is this. One thing that is certainly true of our so-called Kali Yuga is that it is a time of increased attachment. And I'd like to explain why I think that's so. People have more attachments. Remember our definition of attachment? That's our first verse here. We'll deal with that. Attachment is when you depend on someone or something for your well-being. So in ancient times, people lived very simple lives, so they had very few things to get attached to. Even, for example, could you get attached in ancient India? Could you get attached to your car? There were no automobiles. So you could see my point. In a more simple lifestyle, there are fewer opportunities to get caught up in attachment. Today, we have many more wonderful opportunities. I'm being sarcastic, obviously. Wonderful opportunities to get trapped by possessions. For example, attachment. Were you attached, by the way, your cell phone is probably fairly important to you? How about 25 years ago? Interesting. So that is a new attachment you have. Or for young people today, attachment to social media. Decades ago, there was no such thing. Or I think a really telling example is house. Now, in ancient times, people lived in homes, but they were fairly simple, you know, mud and brick and whatever they were. But in ancient times, a home was a very simple dwelling, a place to give you shelter. Today, of course, a house is much more than shelter, is it not? A home is the primary, it looks to me like the primary intent of your home is not to give you shelter, but to give you pleasure. Pleasure palace, some people call that. So suppose, and just to make this illustration clear, suppose you buy not just a shelter, but you buy a pleasure palace. Wonderful. Actually, excuse me, this actually belongs in the text. So I am going to... Let me set that aside, because it comes in the text in a very... Well, since I've started it, it's not right not to tell you it. So here's the problem. It starts off as a pleasure palace. It gives you so much when you move into that beautiful new home. My God, you feel ecstatic. For how long? You become accustomed to the house and the comforts it brings you, and then you start dealing with other problems, like the mortgage, like, in New Jersey, taxes. My gosh. The taxes in New Jersey are amongst the highest in the country. So you're paying mortgage, you're paying taxes, and then after you're there for a sufficient length of time, then you start getting maintenance problems. Fancy houses have more gadgets, and those gadgets tend to break. So what had been an object of so much pleasure at the outset later is not. But that house becomes an object of attachment for you. That's what drives you to buy it and get stuck with the maintenance problems and the taxes and insurance and all of that. So we're going to talk about that problem. In fact, Sri Krishna is going to teach that problem of attachment. We can put the slides up now. Thank you. So we will begin then our study of chapter 5 of the Uddhava Gita. And our topic now is sadhana, spiritual practice. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Mayodhiteshvavahitah, Swadharmeshumarashrayah, Varnashramakulacharam, Akamhatma Samacharet, Akamhatma Samacharit. Good. I started off with the wrong raga. There's a Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. That's the way we chant in the Bhagavad Gita. This is not Bhagavad Gita, so we use a different mode of chanting here. I try to catch that next. It's so instinctive when you see Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. It's like Bhagavad Gita. Of course, here it's Uddhava Gita. Okay, so Sri Krishna now, after this long, long discourse in which Sri Krishna talked about that dialogue between the Avadhuta, the wandering ascetic, and the ancient king Yadu, now Sri Krishna comes back into the role of teacher, guru, and he addresses Uddhava about how to get out of samsara. So he begins by saying that you should be avahitaha, dedicated to what? Dedicated to maya uditeshu, to the teachings which have been taught maya by me. So you should be dedicated to my teachings. What are those teachings? Sarva dharmeshu, my teachings about all kinds of dharma. All aspects of spiritual growth. Also, in order to get out of samsara, Uddhava, you should be marashrayaha, your ashraya. Tricky to translate. I don't think there's an exact equivalent in English for this word. Refuge comes close, but the sense is where you are safe and nurtured is ashraya. So mara ashraya, you should seek me as your refuge, the one who will give you comfort and take care of you. And then varna ashrama kula acharam samacharet. And then samacharet, you should properly follow varnashrama kula acharam. Acharam, the conduct according to your varna, your social group, according to your ashrama, your stage of life, and according to your kula, your family. So, wandering like an ascetic doesn't mean you should just be like a wild animal. Some people have this idea that these wandering ascetics had somehow given up their human refinements, their civility. They hadn't, of course. So, in fact, civility is an interesting point here. So, Sri Krishna says very clearly, samacharet, you should follow the acharam, the proper conduct determined by your varna, social group, determined by your ashrama, your stage of life, and determined by your kula, your family. And I think the point I want to make here is that in this Kali Yuga, especially in about the last 5 years, we've seen a tremendous loss of civility. I find it very odd, very surprising. Civility. So it's become socially acceptable to harass another person, to curse at another person, to shout at another person, and a person you don't even know. Why? And then I think the best example of the absence of civility is in our government, in Washington. It's horrible what's going on today. That lack of civility is an indication of a problem. So we talked about teachings for the Kali Yuga. This is one of the problems of our modern age, is the lack of civility. And if you ask, what can we do about it? You can't do anything about others. The only thing we can do is our behavior should always be completely civil. And by the way, our behavior should be civil, not only in person, but I've observed that many people, when they're on email and texting, they almost take on a second personality. And what do they call it? This Jekyll and Hyde thing? So some people can be so polite in person, and then if you meet them online, watch out. It's a very strange thing, I think mostly for younger people. Anyway, civility means not just in person, civility means online as well. Now, we said this is spiritual teachings, and the spiritual teachings are really coming in one word, and that is that you should be akamatma. Now here, atma means mind. Be ready for that. Atma frequently means mind. Atma, akamatma, is one whose mind is akama, not filled with desire, or simply put, one who is free from desire. So being free from desire, samacharet, you should be engaged in your daily activities and fulfilling the duties according to your varna, social group, according to your ashrama, your stage of life, and according to your family. Fulfill your duties, but fulfill your duties without desire. And here, Sri Krishna brings us right back to one of his favorite topics, as we saw in the Bhagavad Gita. A favorite topic is karma yoga. He's talking about nishkama karma. Nishkama karma means to act without desire. Of course, that term nishkama gets misinterpreted. Many people ask, but Swamiji, if I don't have any desire at all, why would I bother doing anything? Common question. And it comes from a misunderstanding of the term nishkama karma. I'll explain it briefly here, but if you'd like to understand in more detail, just several weeks ago I published a video on the secret of karma yoga. I highly recommend, if you're not clear about karma yoga, that video will help you a lot. We're not going to talk too much about karma yoga here, except to talk about what do you mean by nishkama karma. Generally, karmas, actions, are done based on raga and dvesha. We're back to Bhagavad Gita teachings, back to karma yoga. Raga means a compulsion to get what you want. Dvesha is a compulsion to get away from what you don't want. Conventional karma, actions, behavior, is driven by raga dvesha. Even coming to class this morning, right? It's okay. It's normal. You have a desire for spiritual growth. Thank goodness, that is a good desire. In fact, it's the only desire that self-destructs. Nice way of putting it. Every other desire just leads to another, 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 another. But the desire for moksha is a desire that actually culminates in desirelessness. Now, so nishkama karma cannot mean the total and complete absence of karma, because we're talking about sadhana right now. Sadhana implies that you have a desire for spiritual growth, right? That's a desire. Mumuksha, the desire for moksha, is called mumuksha, or the desire for spiritual knowledge. A word that Sri Krishna is going to use shortly is jignasa, a desire for spiritual wisdom. So these are desires, but as I said, these are desires that ultimately self-destruct. They're desires that lead you in a healthy, life-affirming path of spiritual growth. So they're helpful desires, as opposed to harmful desires. So nishkama here then cannot mean the total absence of desire, which is only found in an enlightened person. In every spiritual aspirant, every sadhaka, there is desire, and not just the desire for spiritual growth. Other desires are there also. And, you know, it's normal. We want to come out of that, but it's normal. So how to deal with all of the desires in life, and desires which seem to go on multiplying? Isn't it interesting? Do your desires in life become more or fewer? You'd like to think that they become fewer, but it's not true. We want more and more things. Every year, there are more gadgets in your home, more gadgets in your kitchen, more gadgets in every model car you buy has more gadgets in the car. Anyway, this is normal. Desires multiply, they don't decrease. So then how to handle all those desires? Nishkama karma is generally not properly understood. Here is how to properly understand nishkama karma. Generally, karmas are done for the sake of the phala, the result. That is, you buy a car for the sake of a car. But if you are really a sadhaka, a spiritual aspirant, if you are dedicated to the practice of karma yoga, you know very well that car will not give you contentment and peace. You know that. Which means you buy a car not driven by raga. Why want it? You buy a car because you need it. You need a car to go to work. You need a car to fulfill your daily duties. Buying a car is a matter of dharma. So here's what a proper understanding of nishkama karma is: an action not driven by raga dvesha, an action not driven by conventional desires, but rather an action driven by dharma, by someone who is devoted to spiritual growth. I'll say that one more time. Nishkama karma is an action which is not driven by conventional desires, raga, dvesha, but nishkama karma is an action motivated by spiritual growth. I need to follow dharma for the sake of spiritual growth. So that's what Sri Krishna teaches here at the first verse. Then the next question is how to gain that nishkama karma, how to cultivate that attitude. It's not ordinary by any means. Imagine buying a car not based on raga dvesha. Think about that. Is it possible to buy a car because you need it and not because you want it? And that's what Sri Krishna is going to talk about next. Anvikshetha vishuddhatma, anvikshetha vishuddhatma, dehinam vishayatmanam, dehinam vishayatmanam, guneshu tattvadhyanena, guneshu tattvadhyanena, sarvarambha viparyayam, sarvarambha viparyayam. This is really nice, because spiritual insights that you won't find in the Bhagavad Gita. As wonderful as the Bhagavad Gita is, it's not, there's more. And we have more here. Very nice. And here, so we're talking about how does a spiritual aspirant, a sadhaka, how does that person cultivate this nishkama karma? And first of all, that person should be vishuddha atma. And pretty obvious how atma can't mean Satchidananda atma here. Atma is by nature vishuddha. You don't have to make it pure. It's innately pure. So here, atma again refers to mind. One whose mind has been purified. And actually, he's going to discuss how that purification has taken place. By the way, a common definition of a pure mind, you know, this is not our topic here, but it's an important topic. What does it mean to have a pure mind? They call it antahkarana shuddhi, purity of mind. The classic definition is a big deal. A pure mind is a mind free from raga dvesha. Wow. The bar is really, really high. Because freedom from raga dvesha is a really, really big deal. So complete antakarana shuddhi, complete purity of mind, is complete freedom from raga dvesha. How to get there? How to overcome all these desires? Sri Krishna here gives some very practical advice. He says, you should anvikshetha. You should observe others. This is very good. Sri Krishna understands that by, you know, the common expression, we learn from our mistakes. Sri Krishna is smarter than that. He says, better to learn from the mistakes of others. And that's what he's saying here. Anvikshetha, you should observe dehinam, other literally embodied people. You should observe other people. You should observe other people who are vishayatmanam. Again, atma means mind. People whose minds are given to vishaya, objects, worldly enjoyment. you should observe other people trapped by their raga and dvesha. Observe others. And observe how tattva-dhyanena guneshu. Observe how, because of their tattva-dhyana, here dhyana doesn't exactly mean meditation, more of an appreciation. By appreciating the tattva, the existence, the reality of guneshu, of gunas. This is a little technical language. These other people who are given to their attachments, vishayatma, they're filled with desires. Why are they filled with desires? That's what he says in the third line. They go on, this tattva dhyana is thinking about the benefits, guneshu. Actually, we have to put those two words together. Guneshu, tattva dhyana, thinking about the benefits of something. For example, that new car. So if you go on thinking about, you know, it's got this really nice touch screen. Almost every car seems to have one now. I've never had a car with a touch screen. Anyway, you want a car with a touch screen, you want a car with this feature and that feature and all these other features, and you go on thinking about all these really wonderful features this new car has, and result of that thinking is raga. A compulsion, I have to get that car. So that raga was born of tattva dhyana by a reflection on guneshu, on the merits, on the benefits of having that car. So if you, Sri Krishna's advice here is actually twofold. You should observe how other people go on looking at the merits of things and then gain this raga, this attachment. I've got to get it. That's problem number one. And then there's a problem number two that Sri Krishna points out that you should also observe in others. Again, why make the mistake yourself when you can learn from the mistakes of others? So what is the mistake of others? Sarva arambha viparyayam. For these people, sarva arambha, all of their efforts, all of their undertakings, viparyayam. Many of you will say ulta. It comes out opposite. And that takes a little understanding here. How is it that other people's actions turn out opposite? What we want, of course, in life is contentment. The source of that contentment is the new car, or the source of the contentment is within. So Sri Krishna's point here is that if you are focused on the car for contentment, you get a car. And a car is not a source of contentment. On the other hand, as he's going to say in the next verse, if instead of focusing your attention on that car, if you focus your attention on me, Sri Krishna says, and he often speaks as me dwelling in your heart as your true divine nature, if by dwelling on me, you gain contentment. By focusing on the car, you don't get contentment. By going within, by withdrawing your attention from these external things and looking within, you have a chance of gaining that contentment, which means getting the car has a result which is viparyayam, opposite of what you want. What you want is contentment. What you get is a car. Is what it comes down to. And of course the car has some benefits, but you also, here again, you have to, there payments on the car, there's insurance you have to pay. Then when you get it, if you get a dent in the car, or God forbid, you have a terrible accident and the car is totaled, that car has a lot of problems associated with it. So that's what Sri Krishna means here. Observe how other people live. Observe how they make this mistake so that you don't have to make it. Observe how your neighbor buys a new car thinking that it will make him or her happier. Observe how that's not the case. Now, Sri Krishna continues. Suptasya vishaya loko, suptasya vishaya loko, dhyayato va manorathah, dhyayato va manorathah, nanatmakatvad vipalas, nanatmakatvad vipalas, tatha bhedatma dhirgunaihi, tatha bhedatma dhirgunaihi. So what Sri Krishna is continuing in the same vein, how to gain this nishkama karma, and it depends on weaning ourselves from the wrong notion that the car can give you happiness. The car is just a car. And there's a common expression used to describe this, an important expression. Let me share it with you. It's called dosha darshanam. Dosha here means defect, by the way. We're not talking about your South Indian dosa. Sorry. Here, dosha is defect. So dosha darshanam means reflecting on the defects. And it's a very interesting technique. It's actually a spiritual discipline, a spiritual practice. And what it is, it's an antidote to advertising. Notice that today we are bombarded, not just today, but for decades and decades. We have been bombarded by advertising, and advertising which makes you see the merits and benefits of owning that particular car. That car is advertised again and again and again, and if you fall prey to that advertising, you will be brainwashed. That's the purpose of advertising, is to implant more desires in your mind, as if you don't have enough already. So these advertisings now implant that desire for the car. How? By showing you its merits, its benefits. The antidote to advertising is dosha darshanam, to reflect on the downside. Certainly there are many merits in having that car. It has all these cool features, wonderful, but there's a downside to everything in life. There's a downside. As I mentioned, for the car, there's car payments, there's insurance, there's accidents and maintenance and all of that. So there's a downside to anything. If we're only focused on the benefits and we... Are you okay here? Okay, this monitor is coming on and off. I'll have to look at that. You're okay. Good, thank you. So if we only look at the benefits and we never look at the downside, the flip side, we won't have an objective view. So dosha darshana is really important, to have that objective view, to see the problems associated. Whatever you have a raga for, there are problems associated with that. So he says, so he continues, so he said that in a prior verse, now he continues to show the defects of whatever you get. How long will that car last? Not only that, so you know how long a car lasts, but you know, what they say is, the moment you drive that car, you've all heard this, the moment you drive that brand new car out of the dealer's lot, you have just lost about $5,000 or $10,000 of value. Just like that, by driving 100 feet. So it shows the value of that car is temporary. It loses so much value in the first minute of your possession, and then it continues to lose value year after year after year until it starts falling apart after about 10 years. So it just, anything made of parts falls apart, like your car. So this is a problem which Sri Krishna points out in a very clever way. He says, think about Vishaya alokaha, think about seeing objects, suptasya, for one who's dreaming. One who dreams sees many things in that dream, like a new car. Or dhyayatava manorataha, or people have these, what do you call them, fancies. You imagine that car in your mind, you picture it in your mind, and think how wonderful it would be to have that car and drive it, how wonderful that would be. Well, what Sri Krishna points out is nanatmakatvat vipalas. The car in your dream is vipalaha, useless. The car in your imagination is useless. Can you drive the car in your dream to work on Monday? Or the car in your imagination. So, and they're worthless because they, nanatmakatvat, because they are not consistent. They go away. They're impermanent. The car in your dream goes away. The car in your imagination goes away. What about the car in your garage? It goes away just a little more slowly. It takes about 10 years. So, but it's impermanent, an impermanent source of contentment. It's just a car. So Sri Krishna concludes tata in the same way, bhedatma dhihi gunaihi. So examples given were for one who is sleeping, one who is imagining, and now one who is awake and reflecting on the wonderful benefits of that car. So for the one who's dreaming, that car is going away. For the one who is imagining, that car is going away. And for the one who is awake, who is contemplating purchasing that car will also go. If you buy it, again, you lose $5,000 or $10,000 in the first minute, and then year after year, it wears out. So Sri Krishna's this is what I called dosha darshana, pointing out the downside to help avoid attachment, to avoid raga dvesha. Then, nivrittam karma seveta, nivrittam karma seveta, pravrittam matparastyajet, pravrittam matparastyajet, jignyasayam sampravritto, jignyasayam sampravritto, nadriyet karma chodanam, nadriyet karma chodanam. Start in the second line. The sadhaka, the spiritual aspirant, should be in the middle of the line, mat paraha. Mat, as you remember, is a pronoun, me. Mat paraha, one who is focused on me, Sri Krishna says. And again, his reference, like in the Bhagavad Gita, is that divinity that dwells within you. That's the sense in which Sri Krishna says, mat para, be intent on me, be focused on me as that divinity that dwells within you, as your true self, as the true source of contentment. So, Matparaha, one who seeks me instead of seeking the car. Again, if you want contentment and you buy a car, you only get a car. But if you want contentment and you seek within, you have an opportunity to truly find unbroken contentment. Usually we have moments of contentment. Imagine contentment that never went away. That content, I think I gave, maybe in the Vedanta class, I gave the example of drinking, sitting in your favorite chair, drinking tea, and you have this moment of contentment until you realize you have so many things to do. And that moment of contentment goes away. Imagine if that moment of contentment just got stretched out. So that when you're done drinking the tea, you don't feel that sense of urgency. Oh, I have to get up and do this. Oh, I have to do that. And yet, you still get up and do all of that stuff, but not being driven by this sense of urgency, but rather, it needs to be done, why not? What do I have to lose by doing these trivial tasks? So you get up and do it. Imagine, I'm really inviting you to have in your mind this sense, the same contentment you have sitting in your favorite chair, sipping your tea. Imagine that contentment being maintained throughout the day. This is not a fiction. This is the outcome of spiritual growth. And how to get that? You won't get it. Will you get that by buying the car? Certainly not. But you will get that by being matpara, focused on the inner divinity. Sri Krishna says, focused on me. So one who is a spiritual aspirant, a sadhaka, who recognizes the limitations of worldly pleasures and who wants to discover the true source of contentment within. What about that person? Pravratam tyajet, in the second line. That person, tyajet, should give up pravratam, actions which are driven by desire, comma. Like buying the car because I want it, not because I need it, but because I want it. So he says, pravratam tyajet, you should give up actions motivated by desire, and on the other hand, up at the top, nivrittam karma seveta. Instead, seveta, you should, karma seveta, you should only pursue actions which are nivrittam. If pravrittam means motivated by desire, nivrittam means not motivated by desire. You buy the car because you need it, not because you want it. And how do you get to that point of not wanting the car? Dosha darshanam, by seeing the flip side, by seeing the downside. So, the matparaha, a spiritual aspirant, should give up actions motivated by desire. Notice it's karma yoga all over again. Here we have, so, give up actions motivated by desire. Continue doing your actions, but nivrittam karma, actions not motivated by desire. Actions motivated by fulfilling dharma. You should act. We've had this discussion many times in our discussion about karma yoga. Karma yoga means to act not for fulfilling your personal agenda, your personal desires, but rather to act to fulfill dharma, your personal responsibilities. And further, that person Sampravrittaha. There's a little play on words here, right? Pravrit, that vritta. Vritta means literally acted. It doesn't make sense. But if pravrittam are actions which are motivated by desire, nivrittam, actions which are not desired, motivated by desire, then what is sam pravrittam? Sam here means well, intense. You should intensely follow this. You should do this intensely. Actions motivated by desire, don't do at all. Actions not motivated by desire, go ahead and do them. But this is one thing you should do sampravritta. You should be intensely motivated towards what? Jignasayam. I used that word before. Jignasa, a desire to know. Jignasayam. You should be desired to know. Know what? Sri Krishna's presence in your heart as your true divine nature, or to use more Vedantic language, you should be motivated to gain knowledge of your true nature, Atmavidya, that your consciousness, the consciousness present right now in this moment, that consciousness is so much more than you can imagine. You think it's, and I've made this point several times, anything that's always around us, we take as being ordinary. Consciousness is always there. Whenever you're awake, whenever you're dreaming, consciousness is always there. Because it's always there, we take it for granted. Well, the joke I made before, anything that's always there, you take for granted, like your spouse. Common example. Okay, like your spouse, consciousness is always there. It gets taken for granted. These teachings are meant to help you understand that the consciousness you take for granted is, in fact, the so-called inner divinity. And this has to be understood. It has to be discovered. It has to be, he says, jignasayam. It's a matter of knowing. It's a matter of discovery. It's not a matter of faith. Belief is good, but it doesn't work here. You can't believe I am Satchitananda Atma. I am, my true nature is divine. You can believe that, but it won't work. It won't work. You know, you can believe you are Satchitananda Atma until somebody calls you an idiot. Which is stronger, your belief that you are Satchitananda Atma, or the other person's comment? The other person's comment will have much more weight. And just, anyway, you get the point. So, jignasayam sampravrittaha. And that sam means intense, fully, completely. You should be completely committed, jignasayam, to this inquiry, self-inquiry. We use the word atma-vichara. The way you will find the true source of contentment is through atma-vichara, self-inquiry. Now, Sri Krishna ends his verse with one more comment that may not be so relevant today, and that is, in ancient times, if you recognize that if you are a sadhaka in ancient times and you've learned not to be engaged in actions driven by desire, you've learned to follow actions, to be engaged in actions not driven by desire, and then how will you gain moksha? How will you gain spiritual growth? In ancient times, people were much, much more ritualistic than today. So in ancient times, it was commonly thought that if you want spiritual growth, This is my pantomime for doing homa or havan. You should do more rituals. You should offer more ghee into that ritual fire. More ghee. What a funny thing. The solution to your problems is what? More ghee offered into that fire. That's how people thought in ancient times, which is why Sri Krishna ends this verse, na adriyet. You should not be concerned with karma chodanam. With the chodanam here means injunction. You should not be concerned with karma chodana, and here karma specifically means, ritual actions. Karma in the sense of Vaidika karma, in the sense of rituals. So, na adriyet, you should not follow karma chodanam, these injunctions to perform perform rituals. And just a closing note here, comparison with the Bhagavad Gita. We saw in the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna on several occasions being highly critical of excessive ritualism. Here again, na adriyet karma chodanam. Don't be intensely, don't be deeply ritualistic. Does that mean you should be allergic to temples? So be clear about this. To avoid ritualism doesn't mean you don't step inside a temple or you don't attend a puja. It means you engage in those prayerful activities. Good for you and good for your family also. It's a good thing to do, but it should not be the exclusive focus of your spiritual life. That's Sri Krishna's point here. And this is a good place to conclude our class. We'll continue next week. Some important announcements. Tomorrow, of course, Sunday, we have our Vedanta class on Shankara's Upadesha Sahasri. And that's at 10 o'clock, followed at 11 by satsang, question answer. And please remember, daylight savings time ends. Anyway, you have to change your clock. Okay. Then, come at the right time. Then, an important note about next weekend. There are some rituals that are supposed to be done when one is 70 years of age. So we're supposed to do those rituals for this one is 70. This one is ageless. Nice. But this one is 70. So those rituals have to be done, and we will do that next Saturday. So instead of our meditation and Uddhava Gita class, the rituals will begin at 10 o'clock, and as soon as the rituals are done, we'll come upstairs here, and I'll have some message to share with you on the occasion, so please come and join us for that. Then the following Sunday is Deepavali. Many of you will be celebrating Deepavali at home with your families. For that reason, we will not have any program on Sunday. So the Upadesha Sahasri and Satsang will not take place next weekend. And final announcement is to prepare for the rituals, as always, will be done in the dining hall. The dining hall needs to be set up properly. We have to put chairs out, some carpets out. So we're hoping that a number of you can stay back after class to help set up the dining hall. You can just wear your shoes, go downstairs into the... No? Okay. No, we're not supposed to wear shoes downstairs. Okay, don't wear your shoes. Go down into the dining hall, which is the right thing. Go down into the dining hall and you can help with that setup. Thank you. And we'll conclude now with our prayers at the altar. Gananahan Tva Ganapatigam Avamahe Kavingavinam Upamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspatahanashranvan Uttavasira Sadhanam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Guru Ratmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyomavad Vyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanuramardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagadgurum Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityor Ma Amritangamaya Om Shri